Oh, you're not going to do your opening spiel? Oh.
Well, I mean, I hit record. I just hit record.
amateur move, Lawrence. Okay, sorry about
now
that.
Now I'm not. Now we're just going to go with that, apparently.
I've ruined everything already. Awesome.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Planning Period Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Treffler, and today we're doing something special. We're doing something a little bit different. I am a big fan of podcasts, as you probably all know, and I've recently been listening to a lot of episodes of a show called Very Bad Wizards, which, while often vulgar and inappropriate, is also highly entertaining. And what they do often on that show, as a philosopher and a psychologist, they will take movies and they'll do movie reviews and look at the psychology and philosophy aspects that are used in the movie and try to break those down from an intelligent standpoint. And while listening to a detailed review of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, it occurred to me that this would be a really cool idea to try in the education space. And I thought, like, we could take some of those great education movies out there, some of those amazing movies that we all point to and Stand and Deliver and Dead Poets Society and a lot of those kinds of movies, and say, break those movies down from an educational standpoint. Like, does the teaching work? Would this work in a real school? Is that how an administration would respond to these problems and issues like that? And I thought it'd be an interesting concept. And of course, the first person I thought of who's the obvious choice to have a movie discussion and still talk about education is the one and only Shane Lawrence. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing really well. I'm excited for this. This is going to be interesting.
As a podcaster and a film studies teacher, I felt like you were the obvious choice to be my first guest to try to tackle this idea. And in true Shane Lawrence style, I gave you a choice of, well, you gave me three movies to pick from. We did a Twitter vote, and the movie that was chosen was
Empire Strikes Back.
Yes, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back. And I had to ask you, like, are for sure that's what you want to talk about? Because when I think about great educational movies, Empire Strikes Back wasn't on the list. And yet, here we are.
Come on now, we put it out to the public, and it's their fault, not mine. Okay,
because yes.
There was, what were the other two that I put in there? There was Half Nelson, and I can't remember what the other one was.
Neither of the other two I had actually heard of, so I was kind of excited, and then nobody picked them.
Well, that's the thing, is I chose those because I was like, yeah, good, it'll be a good excuse to watch movies I haven't seen yet, because I hadn't, you know, hadn't seen them yet. Empire won, so there you go.
I feel like what it really was you stacking the deck. You just wanted it to be Empire, so then you, like, Googled the worst education movies of all time and just picked the bottom two on the list.
No, not at all. Half Dozen Stars, it's got Ryan Gosling in it. Everyone loves Ryan Gosling, right? Like, he's... I was hoping that one of the other ones, not like in a vindictive way, but I was really kind of hoping the other ones would win, just because I love watching new movies. So I thought it'd be a good excuse to, you know, watch one of these shows. But, you know, I thought I'd go for Empire because it's, you know, kind of the dark horse, I guess. I thought most people would just be like, what? No. But apparently everyone was like, no, Star Wars, yay. So, you know.
I think part of it is Star Wars, yay. And part of it is our fans both know us and think, oh, I can't wait to hear these two talk about Empire from an educational standpoint. Let's give them the hardest challenge we can pick from this list.
Absolutely. I don't, you know, I actually just watched it this morning. Well, the first up to where Luke leaves Dagobah anyway. And, yep. I can tell you, I got a lot of stuff. I got a lot of stuff.
You got stuff? I'm good. I'm glad.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be kind of tossing over to you too, so I'm hoping you'll be able to kind of hit it back over the net to me. But I definitely have some ideas and thoughts about this show. So,
well, I think it's going to be good. So the goal is we're going to take The Empire Strikes Back, which was, of course, a quintessential Star Wars film. My personal favorite Star Wars film, by the way, of all of them out there. It's the best Star Wars. I mean, the Battle of Hoth is the greatest cinematic achievement in war ever. I think that's an obvious, obvious conclusion to draw. And it's just a phenomenal movie in a lot of different ways. It is sort of very quintessential to my own childhood, as I have always been and will probably always be a Star Wars freak and obsessed with everything Star Wars. So I think it's a great movie. It's one of my favorite movies, and I think it's going to be cool to talk about it. But the goal is to look more at the educational perspective. And I don't want to speak for you, but I assume that you chose Empire to represent the Star Wars franchise because of Yoda being the greatest teacher, hypothetically, of all time, right? I mean, that's kind of what he's intended to be.
Essentially, yeah. I think he's I was sitting there trying to sort of take apart his teaching style, and it's weird. it's weird. I think, like, I don't even know if it would work in the real world. It seems like a very much like a movie teacher kind of thing, but he definitely is much different than, say, you know, Mr. Keating from, you know, Dead Poets Society, that sort of the, you know, the, speaking of the word quintessential, the quintessential teaching film, I think. And I'm sure you'll get to that one eventually, but, yeah, I just, he's such an odd character, and even just the way he introduces himself to his prospective student. I mean, he invades Luke's camp and starts eating his food, and he's acting super weird. And originally doesn't even reveal himself as the teacher, which is kind of, again, really weird. And eventually when Luke does learn that he's the teacher, it's because Yoda says, "I can't teach this guy."
I think that's it. Let's start there. Let's sure. try to take that perspective and bring it into a classroom environment. I don't feel like it would be effective to, and I don't think you could even pull this off in primary school, but in terms of mm-hmm. like, even in college, I don't know that it would be an effective introductory technique for the professor to just sit in the middle of the room and start stealing people's snacks as they're walking into the lecture hall on the day one of class. I don't feel like that would set the tone for a positive, trusting relationship going forward with your students.
No, definitely not. I mean, have you read, what's it called? For White Folks Who Teach in the Hood. It's by Chris Emden.
I cannot say that I have.
It's a really great book, even if you don't teach in the hood. And I, cause I certainly don't, I'm the opposite of the hood, but great book. But he talks about an experience he had where he was teaching a class and he decided to kind of sit in, as a student. And he said it was like the worst decision he ever made because it immediately destroyed trust between teacher and student. Like when he finally kind of, cause he just sat there and sort of listened to them talking about, you know, whatever their lives and their opinions on the course. And then he stood up after, you know, 10 minutes and was like, "Okay, I'm the teacher." And he said, just, it ruined the semester. Because there was no trust, right?
Right.
So that's why I think Yoda's a bit of a, you know, he's a bit of a movie teacher. And I mean, I'm not trying to take down Yoda. I love Yoda. And I quote Yoda in my class all the time. Like every time a student's like, "I'll try," I'm like, "No, try not. Do or do not. There is no try." You know, I always break out the Yoda for that.
I want to talk about that line at some point, but I want to start with this. So I think his introductory, his icebreaker with his student in this case, yeah. I think we can agree is probably not the best case scenario, right?
No,
it's very adversarial. It's very espionage. Like, let's get a bunch of information before I reveal my true position.
But that's interesting. I mean, is he doing reconnaissance on his student? Is that why he's going like that? So that,
I mean, if we assume that he has all power of the Force, which he basically does, he should probably know all this already because he's been watching them since he was a little boy. So I don't really know that he actually needed to do any espionage. But ignoring that portion of it, that does seem to be the goal, right? It seems the goal that Yoda sets forth as the teacher is to get a feel for the personality and style of his student. That's the impression I get of it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's admirable. You know, you do want to get to know your students and kind of get the, you know, the temperature of the room, so to speak.
It's like a modified version of an interest survey.
Yeah, there you go. So we'll just come in the room and I'll just, at September, and I'll just start pulling stuff off their desks and playing with it, and I'll eat their food and leap up on desks and say, "Mr. Lawrence will be here soon, but it's not me."
You could maybe come in and pretend to be the sub. Like Mr. Lawrence isn't here today. He'll be back tomorrow, but then just pretend to be a sub.
Oh yeah, that'd be a blast. I've honestly, like, one of the things I've always wanted to do, like with my grade 7 English class, I don't teach anymore, so this hope is now dead, but is I always wanted to come in first day of class and be like, "Hello, I am English teacher. We teach English," like just to have this like ridiculous like fake Russian accent and just see how terrified they look. But yeah, never had the courage to do it, so oh well. But anyway, back to Star Wars.
So we meet Yoda and he tries to get all this information about Luke initially. And it is successful from Yoda's perspective of getting that information. Mm-hmm. But eventually he does reveal himself to, in fact, be the Jedi Master as he is frustrated with Luke, which also feels like an unfair position to take, because Luke has been under this misguided belief that he's supposed to find this Jedi Master, and this weird tiny green creature has just been distracting him for the last 6 hours.
Yeah.
I think Luke's frustration is justified at that point.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, he's very much, he's a motivated learner, right? He's the student you want in your class, the one who wants to be there and wants to. I mean, he has to fight to be the hero or to become the student, right?
Yeah, he has to fight to be taught.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to have students like that. Like, can we just skip the roll call and can you just please teach us? Like, oh, yes, children. Yes. So there, I mean, you know, like, again, there's that movie world that we're in, but I mean, nonetheless, like once they actually get into the teaching, the actual teaching portion of the film, I think there's a lot of good things that happen. Go ahead.
Well, you've taken notes. So what would you define Yoda's teaching style as?
Oh yes. I've taken notes. That's right. Here are my notes beside me.
Yep, of course.
Yes, my notes. How would I define Yoda's teaching style? I mean, it's very, you know, very clear, like a mentorship kind of position, right? Right. He, you know, and I mean, the whole Star Wars, the original trilogy, and I think even the, you know, the new trilogy as it stands right now is very much steeped in the whole, like, a mythological epic story structure, right? You've got certain archetypal characters, and Yoda is, you know, he's your guide, your wise man. Or wise person, I should say. So he's, yeah, it's very much like he is possessing all this wisdom. He's the mentor. He's the one who, you know, is, you know, he teaches Luke a lot of stuff very just verbally. He's, you know, he actually talks to him about the Force, you know, what it is and how it works. But there's also times where he's like, okay, now go off, no, go do things, right? Go learn on your own. And I mean, you know, we can't not go through this conversation without obviously talking about the cave. Right, which is huge, both, you know, as an educator and your mythological structure. I mean, that's where all the learning happens, right? Is in when you enter into that other world. I feel like I'm talking too much. Can I keep going?
No, you're good. I'm with you. I'm gonna.
Yeah.
So I think it is a good mix of. I mean, he definitely comes at it from a relationship of a mentorship. He's coming at it from a mentorship perspective. I can agree with that. Yeah. And he does have a good combination of sort of direct instruction or talking to Luke with. Mm. I would say experiential learning. I think of the scenes where Luke is jumping through the vines and flying across and using the Force to move and become more agile through the use of the Force. And I think that's a very experiential learning aspect. Mm-hmm. So I think he hit some good teaching strategies in there, right? There's some good stuff there.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that's actually really interesting too is, you know, there's a point where Luke tries to get his X-Wing out of the bog and he can't. And so then, you know, Yoda does it for him. And I thought, you know, that's a really great example, you know, of a teacher demonstrating mastery. And I know
this is,
you know,
what mastery would look like. I like this that. Is what mastery it's modeling. Would look like. It's modeling.
It's,
yeah.
It's modeling. Absolutely. It is. Right. I mean, he also uses it, I think, to show up Luke a little bit, right.
Yeah,
you know, always with you, bit. It cannot be done, you know? But I think that, you know, I mean, and I know in a real world, you know, there's, you know, been times in my career where I have not had mastery, nor have I been able to demonstrate it. You know, it's like, surprise, next year teaching social studies. And I'm like, I have no training, but yeah, sure. and you go in and you learn what you can and you sort of lay out the tracks as the train's rolling down. And, you know, you do your best and you're a teacher and that's one of the skills that you have or develop. But nonetheless, I think in an ideal situation, which is certainly where Yoda and Luke are, yeah, you should be able to demonstrate some mastery to, I mean, every now and then it's okay to like get up and, I mean, show off, like demonstrate that you're good at what you're teaching, that you know what you're doing. I think that's really important. You know, one of the things I do, I teach computers this year and we do, you know, quite a bit of work with Photoshop. And one of the things that I'll do is sometimes if they're just working, I'll pull out this like high end project that I'm working on with crazy layers and all sorts of blending and, you know, masks and all this kind of stuff. And I'll just work on it up on the front screen just so kids can see me doing it. And part of that is so I can get some work done. But it's also so that they can see that I know what I'm doing, right? That's me pulling the X-Wing out of the bog.
I like that. I like that. We all need those moments in our class where we pull the X-Wing out of the bog. That might be my new teaching philosophy. I like that.
There you go. So no, I really like that. And I mean, it's also an example of Luke failing, right? And then Luke and Yoda, you know, then turns that into a learning point, right? He's, you know, cause Luke says, I don't believe it. And Yoda says, well, that is why you fail, right? So he learns something from that failure. He doesn't just say, see, look what I can do. You said, right?
I don't know. And so that'll bring me back, because you mentioned that that is why you fail, and I will also go back to the line, there is no try. I think mm-hmm. both of those things, Yoda is big time negative on failure. He does not have a positive relationship with the idea of failure. And I think that that is a very difficult position to take as a teacher. I think we have to be more embracing of failure than Yoda is, for the way I read it.
Oh, okay. I'm going to call you out on this one.
Okay.
Because in episode 8, all right, and if you haven't seen episode 8, spoiler alert, so you might want to skip ahead a little bit. But when Yoda shows up, right, when Luke is going to burn all the ancient Jedi texts, Yoda says, failure the best teacher is, or the greatest teacher is. Okay.
Number one, we're not talking about episode 8 because you wanted to pick up Empire. Second of all, that's after another 1,000 years worth of like afterlife learning that he's gotten at that point. So Yoda has matured in his own thinking by the time we see him again in episode 8 is the way I'm going to take it, because I don't feel like he has a positive relationship with failure in Empire. He does say very much that you are failing. You're failing because you don't believe. And it's not you're failing because you need to continue to practice. It's failing because you're wrong. And even to me, that line of there is no try, there's a hell of a lot of try. Everything's try. I don't know that there is a do or do not. I think there might only be try a lot of times. So I don't know that I agree with that line at all. I don't know that I've ever really agreed with that line. And it's so quintessentially Yoda, and it sometimes feel anti-Star Wars fan to say that. But I don't know that I agree with that line in any way.
Okay, I got to step back for 1 second and just say that this podcast has now become 1,000% nerdier. But moving on. I don't know. I mean, I think what we're getting down to is semantics. Like, I think I agree with you in the spirit of what you're saying, in that, you know, obviously we need to try. But I mean, the way I see it, okay, man, I feel like such a nerd right now. The way I see it is that when he's saying there's no try, it's like, well, because every attempt has an end result, has a result, right? And that result is either success or failure, right? So there's either do or do not in the end, right? Your every attempt leads through to some sort of conclusion. So that's the way I've always taken it, is that no matter what you do, you're going to get a result. So, and it ends up, either you did it or you didn't. But I mean, maybe you could take it that he's just saying, you know, only attempt it if you can be assured of success, right? Do or don't bother, right?
Yeah, that's the way I've always, and maybe that's the pessimistic view of the quote. Maybe that's not, maybe I just, I'm outing myself as a genuine pessimist that hides
maybe
it under laughter.
Maybe you're just a Yoda hater.
I'm a Yoda hater deep down. Oh, you caught me. You caught me, Lawrence. So I guess that is a better way to interpret it than what I'm doing. We can roll with that. Yeah, that's better.
It's a different way. I mean, I think we can both agree that the point is that you do have to. I mean, I would say try. Like, I would definitely say, yeah, you got to try. You have to attempt something, even if it's scary, and even if you're not sure if you can do it, you have to. I mean, I agree with you. You do have to try, and it's just, yeah. I think however we choose to interpret the gospel of Yoda is well, we've laid out our our viewpoints here now, and you know, viewers can wrestle and agree or disagree with that one.
They can have the same internal struggles that I've been fighting since I was in like fourth grade or something. welcome to my world, people. This is where I'm at.
I can just see your binder like all filled with all these notes about Yoda and trying not. And
no, it was actually full of just fan fiction I was writing. That's pretty much what it was full of.
Really? Oh, fan fiction?
I do not. I did when I was a kid. Oh. So like that was how I got my start in writing, was writing Star Wars fan fiction, which was actually just like I was reading a bunch of Star Wars novels and then like blatantly ripping them off pretty much, but with changing character names and plot structures, but keeping the same style. Just, you know,
nice.
Mimicry is flattery. Isn't that how that works?
It is. That's honestly how you learn too.
So, yeah. That's how I got my start in writing, but none of it was any good. It's all garbage, but anyways, not relevant to what we're
you
talking
failed.
About.
All right, yeah,
I did.
Got it.
I failed. I did not is what I did. I didn't do. I did not. That's for sure what happened.
Awesome.
But I think, so if we take it that way, I still think it's, if we have that same sort of mentality, even if we speak in these inverse syntax sentences in our classroom, I think that just becomes a confusing environment for students where Luke has to go through an excessive amount of struggle. And it doesn't really appear that at any point Yoda particularly gives him any answers. I mean, really, what answers does Yoda give him to end the struggle, or to show him he's reached the goal, or even to praise his efforts in any meaningful way?
I guess he doesn't really, does he? I mean, he guides him through, you know, little mini lectures, if you want to call them that, like, you know, telling him again, like, what the Force is like. And, but yeah, he does seem to really discourage Luke a lot, even when Luke, you know, has his little vision of his friends. excuse me, when he has his vision of his friends, you know, suffering. Yep. And, you know, Yoda says, well, you could go and help them, but you're going to destroy everything they stand for. Although I think that was just something that the screenwriters just threw in there because it sounds good, because it never really happens.
No, it really doesn't. Yeah.
I'm sure somebody with far deeper love and or knowledge for that particular movie could, you know, shoot me down because Star Wars. On the surface of it, yeah, I don't think he really does destroy what they stand for. I mean, honestly, you know, pulling back from Yoda and everyone else, I mean, most of the Jedi trainers, if you go through the whole movie thing, and I'm sorry to reference other films, but you look at all the other ones, they're terrible teachers. They fail all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, what, Obi-Wan created Darth Vader? And
well, yeah, Obi-Wan definitely led to the creation of Darth Vader, although we could argue that Palpatine had a pretty heavy hand in that creation, but
fair enough. But I mean, who was actually a
successful teacher. I think Palpatine was probably the only successful teacher in the entire thing, because he effectively created a phenomenal prodigy, which is what he wanted. So,
mm-hmm. But he also offered an easier path, right? I mean, that's the big difference between the light side and the dark side, other than the fact you can shoot lightning from your fingers on the dark side too. But the dark side is, you know, it's easier, more seductive, in the words of Yoda, bringing us back to him. But the, you know, the light side of the Force, you know, use your abilities for knowledge and defense, never for attack.
Right.
That's what he said.
I don't know. I think we should talk about the cave, because I think this is...
We have to, yes.
This is the moment leading up to the cave. Yoda's involvement in that moment, I think, is probably the best teacher move he makes. And so what happens is they've done this training session, they're moving rocks and stuff, and all of a sudden, you know, they're feeling this dark side, this darkness. Luke feels this darkness, and they go over and they see this cave, and Luke asks what's in there. And Yoda says something to the effect of, only whatever you bring with you. Like, there's nothing there.
He asks him what's in the cave, yeah.
Yeah, and he says, basically nothing except for what you bring. And Luke decides to go in there, and Yoda doesn't stop him. But as Luke is putting his weapon belts back on, Yoda says, you don't need those in there. They won't do anything for you as you go in there. But Luke continues to put his weapon belts on and goes inside. And I like that moment, because Yoda could obviously stop Luke from bringing his weapon. I mean, he wouldn't even have to be he could just say, no, do not bring your weapons in there. But instead, he just provides the feedback that tool isn't going to help you in this learning scenario. And Luke ignores it and continues to proceed with the wrong set of tools. And obviously the results are not ideal for Luke, as he cuts his own head off in the form of Darth Vader, which we know is foreshadowing to learn that Darth Vader is his father, and a lot of other stuff as well. But
yeah.
The point remains that Yoda's moment there is actually a good teaching moment, I felt like.
No, I agree. I mean, there's been times I really identify with that, because, you know, there's times where, you know, especially when I'm working in more creative fields, like film studies, you know, my kids are working on a movie and I'll look at something they've done, you know, going through the edit, and I'll just point at something like, you sure you want to do that? And they're like, yep. I'm like, are you sure? I don't think it's a great decision. They're like, oh no, I really like it. I'm like, okay. And then you just let it go, because there's 1,000 other things you can fix. It's not a problem. You can't, you know, you can't die on every hill. But then the thing is, with those students, they make those errors and then they show it to 150 or 200 people on, you know, on the night that we show them all publicly, and they sit there and go, oh,
yeah.
Right? The metaphorical equivalent of cutting off their own head. Right. It's that shift in perspective. I agree with you. I think that's like one of Yoda's shining moments. I have to admit, though, like, when watching, I'm like, is this formative or summative? I can't tell.
I think he intended it as formative assessment. I think that was his plan. But then Luke's vision causes him to have to rush off and end his instructional session early. Like, he got a call from the office, basically. Like, I need to remove this student from class. Well, dang, now that formative is summative because he didn't get to take the final. So, sorry, that's your grade now. I think that's essentially what happened in the Star Wars universe.
That's brilliant. I love that. I love that. And yeah, I like the idea that I was trying to sort of just take apart the idea that, you know, he says, you know, what's in there? And he, Yoda says, yeah, only what you take with you. I'm like, so, I mean, when should we send our own students into a cave, and what should they take with them?
Ooh, you dropping deep on.
Well, that's where my mind went when I saw that. I'm like, what do I send my kids with? I mean, is it enough? I mean, if Yoda says only what you need, only what you take with you, that's right. Yeah. I mean, he's got to know in the back of his mind that he's given Luke what he needs to get through that test.
Is this an inquiry based project that he gave him right now? Like, is that what we're talking about? Like, they're defining is that the metaphorical equivalent? Is an inquiry based where they're getting to define the goals and the learning and what they think is most relevant? And that's essentially what they bring with them.
Yeah, I guess you could work like that, right? I mean, I think that's why, you know, when you are doing inquiry work with your students, right, the first thing you need to do is get them to sit down and say, what do you have and what do you need still? It's really important for students to know what they've got in there. You know, the metaphor I always use is having like a quiver of arrows, right? And like, what arrows do you have in your quiver? Do you need more? Do you need different ones? And I think that, yeah, in that instance, Yoda knew that Luke was equipped. He was ready to go to face, you know, evil visions of bad men.
Which hopefully we're not making our kids do that part. That's not what we need our students doing.
No, that's pretty sweet though. Kind of fun.
If we have a dark side cave we could throw our students into, it might be worth it.
Oh man. Oh, that's terrible. I don't know. The other thing that's interesting about Yoda too, I mean, it's like, I mean, he and Luke obviously live very closely. And I think that's an interesting thing. Like, even just something as simple as sharing a meal, I think is a really effective teaching method. Not necessarily like going out and, you know, finding your students and like, hey guys, what's going on? Because that's just, you know, they're
doing that. They won't be able
to
do that.
Yeah. No, they can't play Fortnite when you're talking to them. So leave them alone. But honestly, you know, when students come in, I have students who want to come in and hang out with me at lunch. And like, okay, sometimes, you know, I'm literally walking out the door to go have my adult time with the staff, which I really value. I think that's important. I like that. But at the same time, a student walks in, is like, hey, are you going anywhere? I'm like, nope. Go back and sit down and eat my lunch with them. Right. So I think there's, you know, that's a really interesting aspect of their relationship. It doesn't get a lot of screen time, mind you. But I think that's something that we could think about as well as our own teachers, is like, you know, how far does our relationship extend with our students? And I mean, Yoda, as we've established already, does need to build up some trust with Luke after his disastrous introduction.
Yes, they got to rebuild the trust he lost. Yeah, I don't know that it gives a good impression of the timeline, how long Luke is there necessarily. But it does seem to be a while. I mean, it seems to have been a significant amount of time, you know, I would say weeks at least, right? That's the impression I get from it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I just Googled it, and the theory seems to be about 6 months.
Okay. Yeah. So more than week, many weeks. So about 6 months, but you're right, in that 6 month time period, they would have had to have lived very closely together. I mean, they were living in that little tiny hut in the only developed portion of this entire desolate wasteland planet.
Have you ever had to do that? Not live in a tiny little hut, but I mean, have you ever had to sort of share close quarters with a student, like maybe on a field trip or anything like that?
Not that close. No, I have not. I haven't really done like a overnight field trip or anything like that where I've had a chaperone for an extended period of time.
Hmm. See, we used to do that actually at our school. We used to, right when I first started teaching there, we would actually start the year off with a 3-day trip out to a camp, like out by a lake with cabins and everything. And it was like 3 days and we were camp counselors. And it was, interesting.
That sounds interesting. I don't know that I would be a fan of that.
It was, I mean, this was my first year teaching too, and I still had no idea who I was as a teacher, but at the same time, it was an interesting way to make some really strong connections with students. You know, you had to be really cautious about boundaries. And certainly, you know, I think after about the fourth year that I was teaching that we stopped doing it. But in that time, I definitely learned how better to manage myself and my relationship with my students. But it was still nice to have that close quarter time just to, you know, interact with them and their social lives a little bit and be part of it. Not to be friends, because that's the absolute worst thing you could do. But nonetheless, I felt like there was a, you know, some lasting ripples from that throughout the rest of this their high school career.
Yeah, I feel like you would have to have like, I mean, that would have to build a solid relationship to start off a year with. I mean, you would have, you know, any amount of time in that kind of close quarters, you end up with inside jokes and little things to rib on each other about. And, you know, you build you build relationships that way with just time and close quarters. So I think that would be definitely, I could see the benefits of that going through the rest of the school year.
Okay, can we switch tracks for a sec?
100%. Let's do it.
Okay, Obi-Wan. Like, if this whole thing is a metaphor for our own teaching practice, I mean, who or what role is Obi-Wan playing? Because I think he actually has a pretty strong presence in that film.
He does. Yeah. So we see him at the very beginning on Hoth in vision form. It's one of the first time we see a Jedi vision, actually. And he tells Luke, Dagobah, go find Dagobah, go find Yoda or whatever, which is by the way, a significantly more direct instruction than Yoda ever gives Luke. Like, that is the most direct instruction he gets ever. Yeah. Is just go find Yoda on Dagobah. There wasn't like a metaphor. There wasn't any kind of trick to it. It was just go find Yoda on Dagobah. Maybe Obi-Wan is like the previous year's teacher. Encouraging you, because you know how you have kids sometimes that come back to you the next year and they're like, oh, I just don't get along with this person that's teaching that class now, and you just have to be that one that encourages them, like, no, it's okay, they're a good teacher.
221. Yeah, that's right.
It's a solid Obi-Wan, by the
way. Learn the ways of the chemistry.
It's a solid Obi-Wan. Well done.
Why, thank you.
So maybe that's his role. He's the previous mentor. He's already built that relationship, but he wants to encourage Luke to go find learning from other people.
Yeah. And I mean, he goes to bat as well for Luke as well. I mean, cause there's that big argument that Yoda has with Ben at the start.
True.
Right. Where Yoda's like, I can't train him. He's like, he's impulsive or whatever it is. And, you know, Obi-Wan's like, well, was I any different when you trained with me or whatever, man, you know?
So Yoda really is that old cranky teacher that no one actually likes. Like, he's the awful teacher that everybody's like, that, you know, Obi-Wan in the back of his head is like, okay, look, Yoda's not actually the best teacher, but I can't tell the students that. Like, I have to tell them, well, I know he's difficult to deal with sometimes, but if you give him the chance, he'll really show you that he can learn something. Like,
yeah.
I think every school has those, that cantankerous teacher that no one necessarily wants.
Yeah, but also has that crazy depth of knowledge. I think, you know, I can think of some teachers that I have had and that I have worked alongside who sort of fit that mold of the cantankerous teacher on the front, like sort of as they're on the surface, but it's backed by a deep care and a love for the students. I've also had just cantankerous, horrible teachers who just, you know, hate breathing, and those who do it. But I mean, I remember a teacher I taught with, actually, I just talked about on my last podcast. And she, like the start of the year, oh, kids just hated her. And they'd come into my room and complain about her. And I'd say, guys, give it some time. No, I'd say, everybody, just give it some time. And by the end of the year, you know, even though she was just like hard as nails all the way through, but end of the year, they're crying and they're hugging her and said, oh, we're going to miss you. And like, nobody said that to me. And I was just like, see you, Lawrence. I'm like, yep. you know, there's something to be said for having, it's, I think it's okay as a teacher, I guess we seem to think that we need to, everyone needs to fit into this mold of, you know, the lovey, you know, super, super friendly, super squishy, whatever, kind of teacher, but we don't all have to fit that mold because I mean, if you're trying to fit that mold and that's not you, then you're not you when you're teaching. And I, you know, if your motivation for being in the room is, I think it needs to be backed by a love for the students and a love for what you do. But if you express that in a way like Yoda, where you are a little more cranky about it, I think that's an okay thing.
So the takeaway from Yoda is that we need to embrace our true selves as the way to reach learning in our students.
I think that's a fair cop. Yeah.
Okay. I can dig with that. That's good. That's not bad.
I don't know. I'm just riffing here, but I mean, like we're going deep on, I've never actually thought about Empire as, you know, an educational text or a text for, you know, defining how one ought to educate. But I like this. And I like the idea that, again, that you've got Obi-Wan as sort of a champion. I mean, every student needs a champion. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've done studies on this kind of thing where, you know, they say that one of the most statistically significant elements of a successful young person, like coming out of the public education system or wherever, is that they have had, I think, two or three significant positive adult role models in their life. There's like really, really strong correlation between those two things.
So and Luke has Yoda and Ben as two positive role models.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
That's fair. I mean, he's in search. Luke is definitely in search of, you know, positive role models. I mean, he's you know, he has no father. I mean, that's a whole thing.
Well, he's got Uncle Owen. I mean, let's be fair.
Yeah.
Not anymore. At this point, he doesn't have Uncle Owen anymore. I mean, but whatever. He did have Uncle Owen. Let's be clear.
I mean, Uncle Owen seemed more like a caregiver than, you know, he's just taking care of him. He wasn't really, they didn't seem to have much of a relationship. Right. The only thing I remember him saying is, you know, you can waste time with your idle friends later. You know, that's.
Well, he needed his help for the moisture farm, obviously. I mean, Uncle Owen's just trying to run a moisture farm and he gets the bad rap all the time. So
Luke was a bit of a wonder. I'll give you that. I'm going to go into Tashi Station for some power converter.
If there's a bright center to the universe, we're on the planet farthest from. I could feel like all my students would say that. Like, we're in the middle of nowhere. Like, it's Orlando. It's not the middle of nowhere. Anyways, not related. Okay, so Ben is the champion. Ben is the champion of the student, defending him and standing up for him, but also encouraging him and pushing him to do more, you know, to learn with Yoda. Mm-hmm. So I think I like that image. That's good. We've got Yoda, mm-hmm. who's the teacher that's embracing themselves in their teaching style. And while it may appear cantankerous and difficult on the outside, is also driven by a passion and a love for students, or in this case, the student, to try to save the galaxy. And I think I'm solid with that. I think I'm good with that. Mm-hmm. So that I can feel better about, while I may not agree with all of his method, I can agree that Yoda cares about Luke. So I think that's good. I think I like that.
Well, he does. I mean, you look at, you know, if we can kind of approach the ending of this conversation and talk about Luke's departure, you know, Yoda is, as he's leaving, Yoda is giving him all of this last little bits of advice, you know, mind what you have learned. And he says a couple other things and Obi-Wan's like, don't give in to hate. That leads to the dark side. You know, so there's, you know, they're just shouting all these lessons at Luke as he's leaving.
Like last minute, you know how it is. Like sometimes the bells ring and you're like, no, I just got to finish my thought. Just like, wait, just one second.
Yeah.
Screaming at them as they walk out the door.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I have a name for that in my class, and I call those are called deathbed lectures. So I'll tell kids, it's like, okay, we don't have a lot of time. It's time for a deathbed lecture. Just like, you know, listing off all the things they need to know as quickly as I possibly can. And just like, write it down as fast as you can or whatever. And
well, that's what Yoda does in return. He has deathbed lecture turn at that point.
Quite literally.
Yes, quite literally. Quite literally.
But I mean, all he tells them what is that there's another. That's it, right?
Does he tell him anything else? Yeah, they tells him that. And he's like, you know, I've lived for forever and I want to die, basically, is what he says.
I can just see that.
More or less.
Live forever I have.
He's like, I've been alive a really long time. Don't be sad for me. Whatever.
And he says, time to die. And then, you know, a dove flies off.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's how it goes.
Cool. Anyway, yeah. But okay, what?
So the departure, he tries to talk him out of it pretty intensely. Like,
oh yeah.
He's very much like, you're going to ruin everything your friends stand for and show complete disrespect to all of them. so maybe mm-hmm. don't do that. And he's like, nah, I'm going to do that anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And then he leaves and he promises he'll be back. Right. Like that's the kid that's,
and he does.
That's the kid that I'll bring my homework tomorrow. And, and then he literally brings it like a year and a half later after he's been searching the galaxy for Han, who was on his home planet the whole time after all.
They're just saving on production costs, right?
Yeah.
So, but I think, oh crap, where was I going to go with this? Oh shoot, I lost it. Dang it. So Luke is leaving. He's not, yeah, I mean, there is that element of, you know, like it's like a student maybe, you know, who wants to challenge an exam. You're just like, no, not a good idea. You're not ready. But at the same time, I mean, what was going through my mind when I'm watching that, as through my teacher mind, as I'm watching that, is, you know, there are times where I do want my kids to be in over their heads a little bit. I mean, not for a long time, not for an extended period of time. I'm not going to say, all right, 3 weeks of you not knowing what you're doing. That's terrible, right? But if maybe half an hour, I'm going to say, here's a giga, go. What do? You figure it out, right? I'm okay doing that occasionally to create interest, to maybe help them identify areas of need. So it's maybe a different scenario than where Yoda and Ben are both like, no, wow, you need to stay. Maybe it's like when a student wants to, you know, start using the Bunsen burners in the chemistry lab or whatever, and before they've been trained, it's like, no, you will destroy everything we hold dear.
Including this room.
So, yeah, I mean, you have to kind of have those boundaries for your students, right, and know when they are ready to move on. I mean, I guess Luke did okay. He did get his hand cut off, and he found out that, yeah, his arch nemesis is actually his dad. So maybe he didn't do so well.
Yeah, never mind. It mostly just destroyed everything Luke stood for, not for what all of his friends stood for.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
What? Yeah, and I mean, well, his whole quest, I think in many ways, is a quest for his father, right? He's trying to find his... He doesn't really know that necessarily, but he has a deep need for a father figure in sort of his character arc. So to find out that your father is the bad guy.
The bad guy. Yeah.
The bad guy.
That is no good. No point.
No, definitely not. So I think, and I mean, you know, Yoda and Ben knew that, right? They knew that Darth?
Yep.
Party on Darth. is. They knew, right? They knew the truth, and they were probably just scared of what he would discover. So, I mean, you know, there's good reasons for them not wanting him to go beyond just not having his training complete.
All right. I'm good with that. I like it.
All right.
Good. I think we have thoroughly examined the Empire Strikes Back as a teaching material and as a learning experience for teaching. And, yeah. I think it's quality. You know, Shane, before we started, that this was very likely to be a raging dumpster fire because I did not, in typical Brad Treffler fashion, I did not prepare in any way. I just had the idea and then said, let's do it. And mm-hmm. here we are. We made it 45 minutes or so of recording in, and it's not a dumpster fire, I don't think. I think there's some quality content in here that may be worth listening to if you are a teacher who also loves Star Wars but has never introspectively looked at Star Wars as a teaching material, which I'm sure is a large percentage of the population of this planet. Positive fit in that graph. And I appreciate you guys listening, and Shane, thank you for talking with me and joining me on this introductory journey to what I hope will be a repeat experience for my podcast, as we maybe pick some different guests and some different movies to talk about. And so thanks, I appreciate that, man.
Oh, this has been a blast, man. And I will definitely be listening into subsequent episodes. And, you know, if you ever heard up for somebody, give me a shout, because I love talking movies.
I know. It's awesome. So how can people find you if they would like to talk to you? You know, I didn't even mention your podcast. Make sure you mention your podcast, because I didn't mention that at the weekend.
I have a podcast. It's called The Ed Podcast, or just Ed for short. You can find it at theedpodcast.podme.com. I am on Twitter at The Ed Podcast. That's pretty much me. That's where I live. So check it out. It's a regular podcast weekly. We talk to different teachers, and once a month we do a check-in with coworkers, and we just talk about something to do with education. Yeah, good times.
Cool. And yeah, definitely check his stuff out. I've been on his show a couple times now, and Shane's been on my show before. And so good people, good show. He's got quality stuff going on. I've really enjoyed your check-ins when you've had like the intern teachers and the brand new teachers. Those have been kind of cool recently. I liked that.
Oh, that was fun. Yeah.
Those are cool. So yeah, so check out the Ed Podcast. I think you find it on iTunes by searching for Ed Conversations, right?
That's correct. Thank you for promoting me properly. Well, you know, I barely can't do it myself.
You know, it's good. I listen to all my podcasts on 1.5 because I listen to too many to actually listen to them at the correct speed anymore because I just would never get through them all. And yours, I always have to start from the beginning and put it back to 1 because I just can't jam out to that awesome education banjo at 1.5 speed. I got to have it at the right speed. Got to be right.
That's awesome.
So, all right, man. Shane, I really appreciate it. I hope you guys enjoyed this first episode of our video review, movie review session in education. So have a great one, guys. Music for the Planning Period Podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period Podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio, your voice is right here.